figuring out the best way to handle school when a new contagious disease is ravaging our communities is difficult, as an understatement. Wisconsin teachers, parents, administrators, and kids are all facing different schedules and variables. And that's the focus of our discussion now on The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. We have a leader in the state's education department with us on this edition of the State Capitol Report, and we're taking your calls. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. What is your experience with school districts in your part of the state? What do you need to know to prepare for the next semester or trimester or quarter? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Mike Thompson is the second highest state education official in Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction. Deputy State Superintendent, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Keeley. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. How is the Department of Instruction advising school districts to move forward in this pandemic?
Well, as you know, this pandemic has been challenging for everybody. It's been something that we have been very difficult to predict how this would go during the school year, and that's what districts are dealing with. All districts, virtually all districts in the state this summer, plan for three different types of options to provide instruction to kids: total virtual, a hybrid model which combines virtual with in-person, and total in-person instruction. They plan that for the summer, and they're finding that that's what they're needed to do this school year. With the unpredictability of the pandemic, many districts had to implement all three of those models at different times. And as we have advised districts, the school year is and looking very different than any other school year, and their planning that they have done in the summer is really paying off.
Having those different models that they can switch among then.
That's what they've been doing. They've been switching among models throughout the school year.
And does DPI set certain criteria that suggests, hey, when your school, if it's a hybrid model or you have in-person kids, if you hit this threshold of confirmed cases or if there's community spread to this degree in your area, then we recommend you pull kids from in-person school? Are there clear-cut recommendations for districts?
There are recommendations for districts. The primary partnership around those types of discussions is with the health department. Their local public health departments and the state health departments around what are the factors that they need to look at to determine, is it safe to open? What type of model do we need to deploy right now in this current situation? So it varies across the state. It's because the pandemic varies across the state, and they're in constant communication with local public health departments to make those decisions.
Governor Evers says there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach to education in a public health crisis. Teachers' unions, though, have advocated for metrics that would require schools to switch to virtual learning based on COVID-19 levels in the community. So do you anticipate that you would go beyond the recommendations you have now to create different kinds of thresholds or like a specific rubric that an individual school could use to say, this is the time when to keep our kids safe, we need to go virtual, or it's safe, let's keep kids in school?
Yeah, I do believe that is kind of the debate. People would like uniformity across the state, but the fact of the matter is this pandemic isn't doesn't adhering to those guidelines of uniformity. It is different in every community, and so I believe that will continue. Districts will make decisions based on the needs of their individual students, the needs within their individual communities, and the needs that they discuss with their local public health department. And it's difficult when one school down the road decides that they need to close or go to a different instructional model than the school maybe 15 miles down the road. But I can tell you the discussions that those school districts have with their communities and their local public health departments take into account what is in the best needs of our students at this time during this pandemic and when they make those decisions.
Mike Thompson is the Deputy State Superintendent for Wisconsin Schools, and we are talking about guidance information that the Department of Public Instruction is providing to schools across Wisconsin as we try our best to educate kids here in our state during a pandemic. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What has your school district told you about what's happening in January? What are your most pressing questions for someone who helps to lead the Department of Public Instruction? give us a call now. That number again is 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas at WPR.org. And Deputy State Superintendent, the things you just listed that school boards, that administrators, principals, and teachers are having to work through right now, that is not a short list. Are schools equipped to really do all of this work that's brand new, that we're all learning and building as we go?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, Kaylee. I will say this, school districts are tremendous planners. Well, it's not very difficult to plan when you're changing on a dime, but they've done a lot of planning this summer. This has been extremely challenging times for schools, but it's been challenging times for everybody, both parents and trying to figure out how they, you know, have access to childcare and manage their own jobs. Schools are no different. They are spending an incredible amount of time in that planning. They spend an incredible amount of time in collaboration with their communities, in collaboration with their public health departments, and in collaboration with other districts. We're all trying to get through this. And I believe school districts are doing a pretty darn good job of managing this crisis that continues to change as the months go by.
Yeah, I think many, you know, my question comes from this idea that I assume that school districts are doing the best that they can. And what I wonder is that going to be good enough?
Well, that is another great question. It's certainly, we're going to see learning loss from this pandemic. Certainly, we're going to see the challenges as kids come back in a normal educational environment will increase with the, you know, social and emotional needs of kids and the academic needs. So as districts plan to get through the current pandemic, we do see the light at the end of the tunnel with the vaccines coming. And I know districts are turning to, what does it look like when we come back from COVID? How do we meet the needs of kids going forward? That is not going to be an immediate solution. And to be able to come back to COVID, what will education look like outside of COVID? How will we make sure that the learning loss some kids did experience, we can accelerate the learning so they can catch up? And that will be a long-term kind of commitment to children rather than we'll all fix it once we're out of the pandemic. The needs of schools coming out of this pandemic will be greater and different than they were from year to year in a normal year.
And not only do we have the student achievement piece, but we also hear school district leaders saying students rely on schools for more than coursework. It's where they get meals. It's a place where people watch to make sure that they're safe. What do you want to say about how much we're expecting of schools?
Well, we expect a lot of schools, and schools step up to those expectations. But it is all those factors. It's not only the academic piece. It is the social-emotional needs of kids. It is the needs of kids, as you mentioned, Kaylee, about feeding children, keeping them safe, keeping them in an environment where they can thrive and meet their full potential. This pandemic has just exacerbated all those challenges that school districts face. And, you know, so we know that school districts are going to need to look at the resources and look at the resources that they do have to provide education for kids going forward and provide for those needs that they're going to see coming back into the schoolhouse when this pandemic finally is over.
Yeah, and we don't know when that'll happen, so everybody is still trying to figure that all out. We're talking with Mike Thompson, who stays with us here on the State Capitol Report. He's the Deputy State Superintendent for Wisconsin Schools. That means he's the second in command at the state agency that sets policies for Wisconsin's K-12 schools. And you have a line to him at 800-642-1234. What have you learned from this last bit of time of having school during COVID-19? What aspects do you think really work, and what parts do you think need to go? Let's talk about it. Maybe you're a parent or a teacher whose kid did online school this semester or was in person. Let's talk about the challenges and the opportunities we see here as we figure out how to educate kids in the middle of a pandemic. I'm Kaylee Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. School kids in Wisconsin have a short week ahead of the Christmas holiday and winter break. That looks different depending on your district. Kids might be boarding buses and heading into classrooms all day. Some are doing that just part-time, and others are firing up the digital devices for learning over video calls. We're talking about the state of K-12 education here in Wisconsin. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kaylee Boltina. Our guest is the person who's second from the top of the state's Department of Public Instruction. That's Deputy State Superintendent Mike Thompson. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Denise in Viroqua is on the line. Good morning, Denise.
Hi, thanks. So I'm a school teacher in rural Wisconsin, and I have a huge concern for, we have a class of juniors of maybe 40 kids, and 17 of them are not on track to graduate. And we're looking at options like the Challenge Academy. And I really don't feel like something like that is necessarily the best solution to address what we're looking at is going to be the COVID generation, the COVID class. I don't think these kids should be in school for another 5 years. But we have to come up with something, and I'm wondering what your guest has suggested for this.
Denise, thank you so much for the call. And Deputy State Superintendent, what do you say to Denise?
Well, first of all, Denise, thanks for everything that you do and your concern. I do know people closest to the kids, like you are, care most about those kids. And how do we get those kids back on track coming out of this pandemic? In some cases, the kids going through this pandemic will be stronger for having gone through it. And for some of these kids, their impact on learning will be great. We do need to look at ways that we can accelerate their learning as we go forward to get kids across the line, to get kids career and college ready. And that is what we're, those are the discussions that are going on all over the state right now, Denise, on how do we ensure that kids that have had learning loss that are on our track to graduate, we can get them to that line. How will an education look different over the next several months and in the next several years to help them get that? We'll do everything that we can. And I know your school district will do everything they can to make sure that these kids aren't negatively impacted by this virus to the best of our ability, but this virus has been the biggest disruption in education that we've historically have ever had, and we don't have all the answers on how to make sure that we get kids across that finish line, but we're working towards that. And that part of it is, how do we accelerate their learning? How do we focus on the key concepts that they need to know to get them across that finish line so they are not their future is not jeopardized, that they can go on to post-secondary education, go on to, you know, careers and go on to college and those types of things. So I encourage you to stay engaged at your local level. You're going to have some really good thoughts about how to do that in the classroom, how to do that with what we're doing currently over the next several months, and keep your voice active, because I think teachers' voice in all of this is critically important of how we meet the needs of these kids going forward.
Speaking of teachers, I mean, teachers union representatives have told WPR that school boards would benefit from minimum requirements or more guidance from DPI to at least provide political cover. And so what's your message to local school administrators who are balancing public health guidance, but they're also facing immense pressure from their communities?
Yeah, I will say to those folks, I know that those folks that are running our schools and preparing our schools haven't thought of anything else since last March around this, and are working night and day to work through this issue. We have made a commitment at the department that if there are things that we can get out of the way that are challenges to school districts to provide the right services from kids, we will look at doing that, whether it be changing policy at the state that we have controlled this to change, whether it be administrative rules that we can go through an administrative rule process to change to get things out of the way, or whether it was working collectively with others to change legislation that's no longer relevant in today's environment around schools, we'll work to do that. And so we say to school districts, do what you need to do. Let us know how we can support and help you do what you need to do through this pandemic. And then let's collectively talk about what we need to change to go forward as we come out of the pandemic.
We have heard infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci say that in-person education should be the default position. I mean, he also said shut down the bars, open the schools, and Wisconsin is not shutting down the bars. So there's an element there that we're not following when it comes to his advice. But Republican lawmakers in our assembly have put forward a plan that would require teachers and students to be in the classroom, a more prescriptive approach than DPI has taken. So what support can the state educators provide schools if they need to conduct in-person learning?
Yeah, I can tell you this. I do know that school districts and their planning in the summer, their number one priority is, and it always has been, even prior to the pandemic, is the health and safety and well-being of their students. That's how they've gone about their planning. That's how they made decisions about what type of instructional model to deploy. It's in, and that's how it should continue. I put a lot of faith in local school districts, local school boards, in really looking at the health and safety of children. I don't think there is a person that would not like to see all kids back in an in-school environment full time. That's what we're all working towards. That's what we're trying to make sure we can mitigate the health and safety aspects that are out there. We ought to continue to move towards making schools, providing resources to schools so they can, to the best of their ability, open schools up totally. Hopefully the teachers get prioritized in that vaccine schedule as it rolls out. Hopefully we have access to more testing so we can really know quickly when people are symptomatic, if those symptoms are a result of COVID, and they can have rapid access to testing. So there are things the state can do to help make sure that those environments are safe for kids and safe for teachers. But the decisions currently that are being made around whether they go through a virtual model at times, whether they go to a hybrid or in-person, are all based on the health and safety needs of kids. And that's where it should always remain. That should be the primary factor of making decisions through this pandemic of what type of instruction to provide.
Michael from Lake Geneva emailed and applauds the state for its common sense approach to governing in the education realm. Michael says it would be easy to create rules for everyone. Instead, creating guidelines and systems that support local government is what I believe has helped them be successful. Thanks so much for that email, Michael. And we're talking with Mike Thompson, who's the Deputy State Superintendent for Wisconsin Schools, here on the State Capitol Report. And Rachel in Antigo is on the line. Hi, Rachel.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a principal in here in northern Wisconsin, and we've been fortunate enough to stay in person all year. And that's really due to the work that the district put in over the summer and the teachers and the IAs on the ground. You know, we're wearing masks, we're social distancing, we're hand washing. But what, you know, we really need is help from the community to stay open. We know that in-person learning is best for kids. But in order to do that, we need the community to also follow those safe practices. So I just hope that if people are listening, like, we are really trying really hard to stay open. We are doing everything we can to follow the guidance of our health department, and they've been really, really great to work with. And the guidance that DPI gave us to start off the year was really helpful. So I just ask that the community help us out as well.
Rachel, thank you for helping us understand your perspective on this. And Deputy State Superintendent, any response to Rachel?
Yeah, I will just say, well said, Rachel. You really reflect what I hear from principals across the state of what you're trying to do and the commitment you've made. I don't know, you probably haven't had a lot of sleep since March because of the work that you're doing, but I want to thank you for your work and thank you for that. And it is, this is a community effort around how do we overcome this pandemic in a lot of different areas of society, including education. So how well this works, how well Antigo is doing in implementing their strategies really is dependent on the community working together, collaborating with the community to make those things happen. So great work going on in our state, exactly what Rachel has talked about.
We have just a bit of time left, and I need to ask you about the state budgeting process. We're at the beginning of that, and the Department of Public Instruction is requesting an almost 10% increase in funding over the next 2 years. Why?
Well, we have put together a budget that we think is a budget that is a realistic budget on the investment that needs to be made in kids at this time. And so it's an equity budget. We have found that the pandemic has exposed a lot of inequities of some certain students having access to resources and services that we hope this budget can help close that gap in access to kids. This budget and the investment in education could not be more important than during this time coming out of COVID and the challenges schools are going to face with kids coming back into the learning environment full-time, fully in-person, and when the pandemic finally is gone. And so we think it's a very important budget to get behind. We think it's a very important budget that prioritizes the needs of kids, and we think it is a great investment in Wisconsin.
Does that certainty help schools, too, if we were able to guarantee them more money? Do you think that that would help, or doesn't that matter very much?
Well, I think it matters. I think it matters. I think it's a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. This is not going to magically reduce and get rid of all the challenges they face, but it's a step in the right process to continue the investment in education around the needs of kids, knowing that every kid in this state, every kid matters, regardless of condition, and a school district tries to meet the needs of kids when they have those needs to make sure that they progress. It's what we want for every kid, to be career and college ready. And so this is a step in the right direction. Resources matter. This is a step in the right direction. Districts are finding that this pandemic is not saving them resources. It's costing them resources. They'll do everything they can for kids, but we need to support them from a resource perspective.
Deputy State Superintendent, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Mike Thompson is the second highest state education official in Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction. And we talked about what's happening in K-12 education in our state, from learning in the pandemic to school districts' bottom lines. Up next is news. Then the state capitol report continues with a leader of a healthcare emergency readiness coalition. This is The Morning Show. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. New cases of COVID-19 are declining, and that's a source of relief for Wisconsin hospitals that were nearly full in mid-November. But health officials cautioned that that reassurance could be short-lived if people celebrate the upcoming holidays like they used to before a pandemic. As we work to keep our distance, we've got two vaccines making their way across the country. But how is that going to happen here in Wisconsin? Part of the answer is healthcare emergency readiness coalitions. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent on The Morning Show. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about getting the coronavirus vaccine? Do you live in a rural or remote part of Wisconsin? What concerns do you have? 800-642-1234. You can call that number or email ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Jason Liu is Chief Medical Officer of the Southeast Healthcare Emergency Readiness Coalition and a professor of emergency medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Liu, thank you for joining us on the Ideas Network.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's start at a baseline. How do healthcare emergency readiness coalitions work?
So HERC, the Healthcare Emergency Readiness Coalitions, there's actually seven HERCs in the state of Wisconsin. I'm part of the Southeast Wisconsin HERC. And we're a nonprofit coalition that helps to bring everyone together for large-scale health emergencies. So, for instance, this pandemic, or like imagine if a tornado hits a hospital and all of a sudden that hospital has to find a place for 200 patients, you know, how does it go about doing that? And what HERC does is we try to bridge that need and bring everyone together and share information, train together, discuss plans, and work together like that.
Wisconsin created this system in 2014. Is this the biggest undertaking the HERCs have had?
Yeah, I think our first challenge was back in Ebola, and this is by far, I think, the biggest event for us, I think, in general, not just for the HERCs, but I think in general for healthcare in a very, very long time.
How has HERC been able to help healthcare organizations in southeastern Wisconsin respond to COVID-19? Give us some concrete examples.
Sure. So one of the things that we do is to help, we send out regular situation reports and summary reports, because one of the challenges is there's so much information and data, both scientifically, operationally, and you have to sort out what's accurate and figure out what to get a good picture of what is going on. And so what we do is we actually sort through all that information from government sources, private sources, media, and put them into summary reports that are more easily kind of digestible. And we send that out to our members, which, you know, include organizations and agencies involved in health, public health and emergency response. And that way it gives them a better picture of what's going on. So that's one example. We also serve as a liaison between the organizations, between our members. So you have you know, you have public government agencies, you have private organizations, you have different disciplines like public safety, community, clinics, hospitals, and everyone has their own process and their own language. And so what we do as the HRC is to help connect them and interpret and share information. So, you know, what we do is we work on knowing who has what and who you need to talk to. So when one of our members has this question and they say, well, we have this question and we're not sure where to go with this, we say, well, you know, this is where you should go. And we actually know, you know, so-and-so at this organization. Why don't you go talk to them? And that way we can, you know, get you the information and the help you need.
Have you found state and local agencies, private partners, willing and able to share the information that you need to pull together and then distribute?
Yeah, you know, it took time because, you know, again, everyone has their own process and their own language. But once we brought everyone together and started, you know, sharing common information and getting a better picture, everybody, you know, understands kind of the importance and the advantage of being open with their status and their information and what their needs are. And so, you know, people have been really willing to work together, you know, especially in these days when everyone's challenged with time and availability of resources. By coming together, we can share those, and then actually we have a better impact that way.
You're focused on southeastern Wisconsin. What challenges have you had with the density of population there?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the big challenges for our regions. Every region has its own unique challenge. One of them for us in the southeastern region is kind of that we have we do have more people, and it's more densely populated. So certainly for an outbreak like this, we know it's transmitted person to person. So the more people together, you know, the more potential you have for disease spread. And so with all those people, you know, challenges to, we also have a lot more organizations, and trying to make sure we get to everybody and bring everyone together and everybody's aware of the actual situation going on. That's one of the challenges there, and making sure that any messages and information gets to everywhere it needs to go. That's kind of the difficulty in our region with so many people.
Dr. Jason Liu is Chief Medical Officer of the Southeast Healthcare Emergency Readiness Coalition. You may have heard them called HERCs. And we're talking about rolling out the vaccine and how healthcare emergency readiness coalitions are helping to try to figure out how Wisconsin can combat COVID-19. Taking your calls at 800-642-1234. We have a physician on the air. What question do you have about this pandemic? 10 months in, the end is in sight, but months of continued risk are ahead until we can really get our grips on this. 800-642-1234 for your calls. Dr. Liu, last week, Wisconsin received shipments of the Pfizer vaccine. How is the rollout going in your area?
So far, it seems to be going well. Certainly, we've had minor hiccups, but overall, things are going fine, and the kinks have been worked out. And, you know, I've been seeing and talking to people who've been getting the vaccine. I've talked with several friends this weekend and coworkers who actually have already gotten their shots, and it's been going well.
What do they say to you about that?
Yeah, they said it was, you know, pretty smooth process overall. They said aside from their arms being sore for a few hours, they were doing well.
We talked quite a bit about the fact that the Pfizer vaccine requires that ultra cold storage. Were clinics and hospitals in your network prepared for that?
Yeah. So fortunately, you know, there was warning because everyone was aware that this type of vaccine needed the cold storage. So part of what HRC was doing with all of our member organizations, you know, working with government agencies and private organizations in the private sector, is identifying, you know, the resources we had available to handle that kind of cold storage chain, to find out, like, you know, where we could actually store it, where they were located, and figure out, then you can figure out how to get the vaccine to where it needs to go from there. So it has been a challenge, but it's something that actually is working out.
Phase one of the vaccine rollout in Wisconsin prioritizes healthcare workers. What's HERC's role in helping to determine priority within that group of people?
Yeah, one of the big things we've been doing is to just make all of our member organizations aware of, you know, the phasing and helping to get them the guidance that's been issued by, you know, the state agencies, and as well as the guidance coming from professional societies and also from the national advisory committees, so that, you know, people can actually work on their plans. And honestly, you know, all of our members have been working on the vaccine prioritization plans within the organizations for a couple months now, since, you know, we were aware that we would be getting the vaccine here toward the end of this year. And so, you know, we're actually already planning for the next phases to see how we expand out after, you know, the first few weeks.
And how does that next phase of vaccinations work? Because certainly we're looking for more Pfizer vaccine, and because that takes two doses. The Moderna vaccine was also granted emergency authorization that happened from the FDA last week. That's a two-dose immunization, too. So maybe we'll then begin to get doses of that. I mean, how are we juggling all of these elements, knowing that we don't have that much of them and they need to go to the right places?
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's part of this planning that everyone's been working on, is to weigh all of those factors. You know, you're going to have the overlapping of the phases. And so, like you said, it's juggling kind of those, all of those different variables. And so really right now the focus is on that phase 1A, you know, getting all of the frontline healthcare workers and the long-term care facilities and emergency responders vaccinated. And the way the plan works is, you know, they're tracking the numbers and which people got those shots, so that in 3 to 4 weeks they can get their second dose, so that they can get, you know, the full advantage of the vaccine. And, you know, once everyone's in that phase has had the opportunity to get their vaccine, then we can start moving on to the next phase. And, you know, I think you pointed out kind of one of the key things to remember is right now there's only limited amounts of the vaccine. So, you know, we have to do this in a stepwise process. But eventually everyone will get the chance to get the vaccine. We're going to have a lot more doses coming in 2021 than we have now. So, you know, there'll be an opportunity eventually for everyone.
We're talking with Dr. Jason Liu on this edition of the State Capitol Report, talking about how Wisconsin's Department of Health Services is contracting with coalitions across the state to get the COVID-19 vaccines to people who need it most, like our healthcare workers. We're working to answer your questions and listen to the experiences you've had in your part of Wisconsin. Join us here on the Ideas Network at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Ask your questions. Share what you've seen in your part of Wisconsin. I'm Keeley Boltina, and you're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. Six years ago, when Wisconsin created regional groups to support public health and safety, no one knew what would become of 2020. Now these healthcare emergency readiness coalitions are playing a role in trying to create a new reality, one where the COVID-19 pandemic is under control. Our guest today on the State Capitol Report leads one of those organizations. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina, and you're part of this conversation. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the rollout of the coronavirus vaccine? Maybe you want to share your experience in your part of Wisconsin. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Dr. Jason Liu is the Chief Medical Officer of the Southeast Healthcare Emergency Readiness Coalition. Dr. Liu is also a professor of emergency medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dana sent us an email, and the question is, how are essential workers determined and whether they have early access to the vaccine, and what proof will we have to show? Dr. Liu, what can you say to Dana?
Yeah, so there's actually the... there's a lot of the professional societies and also the national advisory committees at the state and the federal level have actually issued a list of defining what essential workers are. And in terms of getting the vaccines, what's going to happen as we get into that phase is that public health and health care organizations are going to work with the organizations that essential workers work for to figure out the best way to bring them in and get vaccinated. And generally, that's going to be working through, you know, your employer. So usually, you know, I would guess that they'd have lists and your identification would serve to that process.
Do we know what vaccination will look like once we have adequate supply and once we've handled our frontline workers and people who are in long-term care facilities and it's publicly available?
I'm sorry, I guess, how do you mean by that question?
Is this something that we should expect will roll out like a flu shot, like we can go to the pharmacy and just get it? Or is this going to be clinic-based that we'd need to go through a specific doctor's office? Do we know what it will look like when it's available to general people?
Got it. Okay. Yeah, so I would say in the beginning, it probably, you know, we're going to have more limited amounts, even when we start rolling it out to the general public, and it'll probably be going through clinics, doctor's offices, hospitals, and certain other organizations. And I think eventually it'll be like any other vaccine that we can get and that it'll be widely available. You know, probably you will be able to go to, you know, walk-in clinics eventually. You know, obviously we don't know the timeline when we'll get there, but I think we will get there at some point.
You are, in addition to your HERC role, an emergency room physician at the Medical College of Wisconsin. What's it been like for you these last 8 months?
Well, it's been pretty busy. We've all been busy, you know, all of the hospitals and the ERs in our state and across the country, we're still here. We're available to take care of anyone who needs it. You know, we've had to flex our space and our staff. But we're managing to take care of the patients, both with COVID and without COVID. You know, I think, you know, obviously COVID is the focus of our attention right now. And we are, unfortunately, we're still seeing pretty high levels of that in the hospitals. You know, although we've plateaued over the last few weeks, you know, I think it's important to remember we actually are still way above the levels we were back in March and April. And we're still feeling it kind of in the ER and in the hospital. And, you know, the usual medical emergencies are still going on for us, you know, falls, diabetes, car crashes, high blood pressure, heart attacks, you know, all of that doesn't stop just because there's a pandemic. So we've still been doing that thing. So, you know, it's been busy. It's been stressful. But you know, it's been amazing to see how all of my coworkers are stepping up. You know, despite the long hours and the stress, everyone's looking out for our patients, looking out for each other. And that helps keep me motivated because, you know I don't want to let anyone down. Don't want to let my coworkers down, my family down, you know, my patients down.
Dr. Jason Liu is an emergency department physician and also chief medical officer of the Southeast Healthcare Emergency Readiness Coalition. And we're talking about COVID-19 in Wisconsin and how these HERCs help to distribute and handle care in different regions of the state. We have 7 of them. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. Dr. Liu, the state received word that we'd be receiving less COVID-19 vaccine than originally planned. What do those moving numbers of vaccines mean for the logistics of that in your region of Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's the logistics and the plan, I think, are still going to work. I think, you know, it is important to remember, and we knew this going into this last couple weeks with the vaccine, that we're going to have less vaccine right now for the time being, we have less vaccine than there are people that are eligible to receive it. And even within the first phase, when we're limiting to healthcare workers, there are a lot more healthcare workers and long-term care facility residents than there was vaccine available. So, we knew that. And so it really doesn't affect kind of our vaccination process. And eventually, we'll get more, and then we'll keep vaccinating as we get more.
And as an emergency room physician, you're working directly with COVID-19 positive patients. You would be prioritized for immunization. Do you know when you'll get that opportunity?
Actually, I don't. I'm waiting for my turn. I am ready to go. As soon as they offer it to me, I'm going to go get the shot. I'm ready to go. Each organization has a specific way they prioritize within the group. And for us, it's random. So some of my coworkers, they got picked, and they've actually gotten their vaccine over the weekend. I'm in line, so I can't wait.
Have you heard of any side effects they've been experiencing?
Most of the people I talked to have said that really it was their arms were sore, and that was really all they had. One person had some chills that night, but then they were fine the next morning. So, I haven't heard any stories from the people I've talked to of any major side effects.
Yeah, and those are all within the expected realm of side effects from this vaccine.
That's correct. Yeah, I think the most common one is pain in the arm. But I think that's to be expected. If you stuck me with a needle in my arm, my arm's going to be sore for a little bit.
Point taken.
Yeah, from the data that they had in the research trials, they showed that some other kind of relatively mild side effects are possible, feeling a little bit fatigued, tired, some muscle aches, occasionally chills or headache, stuff like that.
We've heard you say in this conversation, we've heard public health officials say it, don't expect the vaccine to be widely available until late spring at the earliest. So what message do you want to share with people who are not in that line right now, or not in the queue or high risk, that are waiting on immunization?
Yeah, I think one is that we are going to get more doses, and there's going to be more coming in 2021. We're going to have a lot more vaccine available next year than we do now. And so everyone is going to have the opportunity so they have that chance to get vaccinated. The other thing is it's everything that we've learned and know about the virus still applies. Wear masks, wash your hands, stay 6 feet away from other people when you go out. Those are still important. And even people who do have the vaccine, we still have to take our precautions. I myself am waiting for the vaccine, and, I'm still wearing my mask, washing my hands often, using the protective gear, staying two arms length away from people to reduce my risk.
Dr. Liu, thank you for your time today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Dr. Jason Liu is Chief Medical Officer of the Southeast Healthcare Emergency Readiness Coalition, also an emergency department physician. I'm Keely Boltina. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.